This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodl Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
I'm here with Dr. Lee Fletcher from Oxford University, and he works on Saturn. So could you tell us a bit about your work?
Sure thing. I first got into working with Saturn's weather systems and the sort of physics and chemistry that you see on these planets by working with the Cassini spacecraft. Now, Cassini's been up there since 2004 and has been returning some spectacular images just recently. Back in December of last year, both amateur observers and the Cassini spacecraft reported that they were starting to see some very strange goings-on in Saturn's northern hemisphere. Now, Saturn has extremely long seasons. Okay, they last about 7.5 years. Back in 2009, the rings of Saturn were edge-on as viewed from planet Earth and from the Sun. That means that you've got spring and autumn in the south and the northern hemisphere, respectively. So what's going on now is that Saturn's rings are slowly tilting and opening up, so you can see them if you look through a telescope. And that means it's becoming springtime and summertime conditions in the northern hemisphere. Now, the change in the amount of energy and sunlight that you start to deposit in the atmosphere means that you can start changing the atmospheric structure slightly. And those changes can lead to large weather events, large weather phenomena taking place. And so what Cassini has seen recently is that a gigantic storm has erupted in Saturn's northern hemisphere, and it's being tracked both from ground-based telescopes, from the Cassini spacecraft, and most importantly by amateur observers from around the world.
So when you see a storm on Saturn, what's it actually look like?
Well, in this case, Saturn's atmosphere is normally serene. If you look through a telescope, you can see that it's got this wonderful yellow ochre sort of colour. What the storm looks like is a gigantic region of extremely bright white cloud material. And I think that these are fresh ices that are being brought up from below. Now, when I say ice, I'm not just talking about water ice that you'd find in your freezer. This is a combination possibly of water ice, but also of things like ammonia ice. And it's ammonia gas, the condensation of ammonia gas, which forms the main cloud decks that you see on both Jupiter and Saturn. So what we're saying is that this storm is dredging material from deep within Saturn's atmosphere and bringing it up to the level at which it starts to reflect sunlight. And that's why we see this white structure. Now, it starts in a single spot. It starts in a spot up in Saturn's northern spring latitude. But Saturn has got these jet streams, these flows that move to the east and the west with rather high velocities. And those jet streams can shear the initial bright white spot out. So it actually forms what looks like a tail downstream. And that tail is now, it started in December last year, and it's now April 2011, and the tail is spread all of the way around Saturn, and it's sheared out to basically looks like a new bright white stripe on Saturn with a lot of structure in there. And it's readily visible through amateur telescopes.
And with storms on Saturn, I mean, I might be going a bit crazy here, would there be like lightning and thunder associated with this? Would you be able to see anything like that?
You're spot on. Lightning and thunder were always expected to be seen on Saturn. Of course, it's rather different conditions to what you see on Earth during a thunderstorm. The scales are very different because you've got a mostly hydrogen helium atmosphere with clouds that can extend hundreds of kilometres upwards and downwards. But back in 2009, in a different storm, I mean, it's not the same storm we're talking about here, but in smaller convective features, there were observations by Cassini of lightning flashes. So if you like, super Saturn lightning taking place. We know that this happens on Jupiter. The Galileo spacecraft back in the late 90s and early 2000s also spotted lightning on Jupiter. It's anybody's guess as to what this might sound like if you were to hear a super Jupiter lightning bolt strike somewhere in the atmosphere. But I expect that this storm that we're currently seeing on Saturn is going to be an immense source of lightning strikes within Saturn's atmosphere.
And observing these storms on Saturn, can you find out more about the actual atmospheric physics? How detailed can we go in what we understand about it now?
Yeah, so when you're talking about atmospheric physics, you're talking about the way in which fluids flow from one location to another and what drives the motion of the atmosphere. If you look at Saturn and Jupiter, what you are mainly seeing is one level. You're seeing the cloud tops of this atmosphere, and all the really interesting physics is taking place beneath those clouds, and it's driving what the clouds will look like higher up. And so by looking at how the atmosphere is evolving with time and changing on hourly and daily and maybe even monthly timescales, you can start to get a handle on the forces which are driving the atmospheric flow. And in particular, these storms are driven by something we call instabilities. So you might have a flow that is relatively stable over a long period of time, but for some reason, some small perturbation, only needs to be tiny, can then make a self-reinforcing structure. And that structure can grow and evolve over the time to generate these spectacular features that we're seeing.
And can we go back to the amateur involvement with this? So we have quite a lot of amateur astronomers as our listeners. How do they get involved?
You know, amateurs are key to this process, and there's a very good reason for that. If I want to use a giant telescope here on Earth as a professional, I have to write a long proposal, I have to justify the science, I have to justify the technical side of things. That goes off to a panel of experts. They take their time in trying to decide whether it's worth doing or not. Whereas the amateurs, they're out in their back garden night after night, I don't know, avoiding the misses or not wanting to watch EastEnders or something like that. And they're observing the way in which these atmospheres change on a nightly basis. And that's an incredibly useful data set for us professionals. Now, there are websites around the world that allow you to upload JPEG or various different forms of images to the website. And that is a very valuable resource for professionals who can then go and peer back through all of those data sets to see... see what's changing over the course of time. One in particular that I use quite a lot is called PVOL. If you just type that into Google, I think it's called the Planetary Virtual Observatory. Okay. And that's somewhere that people regularly upload data to, and you can go and look at both the Jupiter and Saturn sections on there. And also the British Astronomical Association has got both Jupiter and Saturn sections, and the heads of those sections, you can find their emails just by going to the BAA website, are quite ready and quite happy to accept emails from amateurs providing these images. I have to say that the amateur community, Saturn's storm is one great example of all of this, but back in 2009, a really talented amateur guy called Anthony Wesley, who was based down in Australia, he observes Jupiter every time it's available in the sky, and he noticed a dark scar on the southern hemisphere of Jupiter, and it turned out he contacted myself and a few others in the professional community. We then followed up with ground-based observatories here, and we discovered that an asteroid strike had occurred within the atmosphere of Jupiter, and it was his discovery. This amateur guy who was just really dedicated to the cause provided us with all the information we needed, and he gets all the credit for making that discovery. It was quite astounding.
Have you ever seen an impact on Saturn, or did it just happen on Jupiter?
We've never seen an impact on Saturn. There is indirect evidence that they have certainly occurred in the past. I mean, you only have to look at the cratering records on the moons themselves to know that there's a lot of rapidly evolving features out there. And of course, the rings themselves could be evidence of some sort of catastrophic disruption of a moon or a satellite or something like that. We've never seen any impact flashes or impact scars on Saturn, which of course we've seen on Jupiter now on four separate occasions, with Shoemaker-Levy 9, a giant comet, back in 1994, with the asteroid strike in 2009, and then last summer in 2010, amateurs who were using webcams to video Jupiter spotted optical flashes that lasted maybe 2 or 3 seconds or so, and we believe those were, if you like, shooting stars within the atmosphere of Jupiter. So we've seen a lot on Jupiter. We haven't seen so much taking place on Saturn.
We've been talking just about optical observations of Saturn. If you go to other wavelengths, do you find out more about the atmosphere?
Absolutely. And in fact, over in Oxford, most of my time is spent looking at infrared wavelengths. So these are wavelengths that are longer than the visible reflected sunlight and are actually sensitive to the heat energy from the planet. So we're not talking about reflected sunlight here, we're talking about the thermal emission from the atmosphere itself, and that's sensitive to a range of things. The main thing is the temperature structure as you go from deep within the atmosphere to high up in the what we call the stratosphere, high up, and to the composition, so the distribution of the various gases like methane, like ammonia and various hydrocarbons, and also to the distribution of clouds and hazes and aerosols and things. Now, of course, with all those different pieces of the puzzle adding together, it can make for quite complicated interpretation of the spectra that we see. And so we have a computer model that's written in Fortran code, if you remember that far back. And that basically takes those input spectra that we've measured from telescopes and from Cassini, and it turns them on the head, and it works out what must the atmosphere be made of and what must the vertical structure of the atmosphere be to produce the spectrum that we measure. It's called inversion. You basically take the output measurements and you figure out what it must be like to generate those measurements in the first place. And that's how we do things like measure the temperature, measure the distribution of a gas, measure the distribution of a cloud. So yeah, longer wavelengths, extremely useful to us.
Have you got any results that you can share with us?
Well, watch this space, because this is something that I'm actively working on with colleagues around the world. Guys over in the United States, people over in Spain, in France, and here in the UK. We're sort of spearheading a project to try and figure out, specifically for Saturn's storm, what on earth is going on, and how do we explain why it's happening now, why it's happening at this particular location, and what effects will this storm have on Saturn's atmosphere over the coming years. So we do have results, and I'm working very hard on making sure I've got the right answers before we go any further.
Well, thank you very much for talking to us today, and good luck with everything.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Well, Lee, thank you for joining us again on the Jodcast. Got you via Skype, so I hope that this all works. So at the end of that interview, you at NAMM, you talked about these new results that you had, but you couldn't tell us yet because they weren't published. And since NAMM, those results have been published. So could you tell us a little bit about what you found out?
That's right. It's been quite an exciting time when we've been looking at Saturn using various different wavelengths of light sensitive to various aspects of Saturn's thermal distribution. So by that, I mean how the temperature varies from place to place, both with height and horizontally with latitude and longitude. Now, by doing that, by looking at thermal infrared wavelengths, we were able to get to see a new side of the storm, something that people had not been able to observe before, simply because we didn't have the right sort of technology to do so. So if you like, this has been quite a lucky break for those of us planetary scientists working at these wavelengths. So for the first time ever, we've been able to look at the thermal effects of one of these gigantic storm systems. And as I mentioned when we were back at NAMM, we were in for a few surprises. And the main one was that this storm we know to be a bubbling tropospheric disturbance, so something that's taking place deep down within the planet's weather layer and manifesting itself as those incredible systems of bright light and dark clouds down at these are levels we call the troposphere. Now, we thought that storms and turbulence related to the storms would be relegated down to these deep atmospheric pressures. It turns out we were quite wrong about that. In fact, the storms had such a huge effect on Saturn's atmosphere that it's perturbed temperatures, gases and aerosols really high up in the region that we call Saturn's stratosphere. So that was the brand new thing that we saw by looking at this new data.
So when you talk about being high up and low down, how do you measure heights? Can you take them from a surface on Saturn, or do you take them from the top? How do you do that?
Obviously, it's a little bit complicated because we don't have a surface on Saturn that we can use as the baseline level, if you like. So what we tend to do is we talk about the distances above and below the topmost cloud layer. Now, those topmost clouds, we believe, are crystals of ammonia ice. That's never been proven completely, but that's the best hypothesis for what we are right now. And so when I talk about vertical distances, I'm talking about regions above and below that level. Now, where this storm first was generated, where it first activated, if you like, we believe is maybe 200 or 300 kilometers deeper down than those visible cloud decks. Now, that's down in a region where water begins to condense in Saturn's atmosphere, and so it's down at that water cloud deck that this storm may have erupted in the first instance. So the storm then rises material upwards and a giant buoyant plume, if you like, that brings it up to the altitude of those ammonia clouds, and that's where we first detect it and first are able to see it. And so, as I mentioned before, we believe that the storm should be localized within that weather layer between the water cloud and the ammonia cloud. So we were surprised then when you had effects happening high in the stratosphere, maybe another 200 or 300 kilometers further up than that. And just to give you an idea of how far 300 kilometers is, the space station orbits the Earth at about that altitude above the ground.
Wow.
So it'd be like a storm here on Earth affecting altitudes as high up as the space station is orbiting. So we're talking something that's quite beyond human scale and human experience.
So your new results, does this completely revolutionise our understanding of the atmosphere in Saturn?
I think it shows that there are a lot of questions that we still have to answer about these atmospheres. We really can't get a grip right now on why this storm has occurred at this particular point in the seasonal cycle. Now, Saturn has these seasons that, or it has a year that lasts for 30 Earth years. And so a season on Saturn is about 7.5 years long. We know that storms occur on Saturn at various different times, and they're mostly clustered around the summer solstice, so when the northern hemisphere is pointed towards the sun, and it's the balmiest summertime conditions up there. But we don't really have an explanation for why they happen during the spring and summer. You know, why don't they happen during the winter, for example, or during the autumn or the fall? The best explanation that we have so far is that down in that water cloud where all these turbulent this turbulent activity is taking place, that sort of activity is happening very frequently. In fact, all of the time throughout Saturn's year. It's just that during the springtime and the summertime, the conditions within the atmosphere are just right to allow these storms to penetrate much higher up than normal, to altitudes where we can actually detect them both from the Earth and from the Cassini spacecraft. So we're starting to get some hypotheses together, but I think this storm is really showing us that there's a lot that we still need to learn about how Saturn's atmosphere evolves with time and what's going on deep down within the atmosphere at layers that we can't really see, that water cloud layer being particularly interesting.
So the data you've got is from Cassini. How much longer has Cassini got in its lifetime? Will you be able to observe Saturn for quite a lot of its year?
Well, Cassini, we expect to go on till 2017. By that point, it'll have been up in orbit around Saturn since 2004, so it will be a grand old spacecraft by then. What they have to do is, because we have a lot of very interesting satellites in the Saturn system, namely places like Enceladus and Titan, we can't just leave Cassini up there as a dead spacecraft once the fuel runs out to continue orbiting the gas giant. We have to do something called a deorbit in order to plunge Cassini into the cloud tops of Saturn and effectively remove the spacecraft from the system. So that is scheduled in the current baseline of the mission for the latter half of 2017, by which point Saturn will be at its northern summer solstice. So we'll have seen from the winter solstice back in 2002 or so, all the way through to the summer solstice, which is about half of the Saturn year. Now, as you can imagine, that's an amazing data set for a planetary scientist to have, to be able to observe a planet for half of a Saturnian year. So we're learning a lot, but it would be nice if we had it there for the long time scales. Of course, what we are now learning how to do is how to do a lot of these measurements from the ground using giant observatories. And in fact, the paper that we've written uses both Cassini data and data from the Very Large Telescope out in Chile. Now, that VLT data, the beauty of that is that you get a full image of Saturn in one snapshot, whereas Cassini, what it has to do is build up the images very slowly over the course of time. So Vizier, or the instrument called Vizier on the Very Large Telescope, can give us a similar amount of data in just a single snapshot. But of course, there is a big problem with doing ground-based work, and that is that you have the turbulent atmosphere to look through to actually make your measurements through. And that makes it rather difficult to provide accurate calibrations. And sometimes with variations of seeing, you don't quite get the resolution that you might like on the planet. So there's pros and cons to using spacecraft versus using ground-based observatories. And of course, in the future, when Cassini is gone and when Cassini is just a memory, we'll only have the ground-based facilities to work with.
And so your paper came out last month, I think. And since then, is there anything else exciting that's been happening on Saturn?
Well, this storm that actually started back in December 2010 has continued to rage up there in Saturn's atmosphere. Now, I mentioned before that they had a huge effect on the high altitudes, the stratosphere of Saturn. In fact, it created something that we call a stratospheric beacon. This was a large region of warm air within Saturn's stratosphere that we thought was related to air that is sinking downwards, being squeezed, and basically heating up because of that adiabatic compression. Now, what we didn't expect was for that feature to be quite so long-lived. And in fact, it has now circled the planet entirely. It moved westwards with all the zonal flows in Saturn's atmosphere. and it intensified since we wrote the paper. Now, I have to tell you that the scale of that intensification was quite unprecedented, and we have now temperatures that are nearly 60 to 70 degrees higher within these stratospheric features than in the neighbouring quiet, quiescent atmosphere. So there's something quite amazing going on that is invisible if you look in reflected sunlight, invisible wavelengths. But in the thermal infrared, you can see that there's something happening that we've never seen before and we don't fully understand yet. So we've been applying for lots more time on places like the VLT, and we're also having the Cassini spacecraft continuing to monitor these features to try and understand what's going to happen to them over the coming months. But that storm is still going strong.
And just finally, you said that you were making kind of temperature maps of the atmosphere. Do you translate those into kind of images that we can go and have a look at?
Well, with the Very Large Telescope, the images that are taken through a filter that is actually sensitive to Saturn's temperature field. And so those images are available to anybody to look at. They're in the paper that was published online a couple of weeks ago now. And the images are available on the website run by the VLT and from the Saturn Cassini website run by the Jet Propulsion Lab out in the States. So, yes, there are plenty available for you to go and have a look at.
We'll link to those in the show notes.
Okay.
Well, Lee, thank you very much for joining us again, and good luck with everything in the future.
Thank you very much.